Hello and welcome to the seventh edition of the Pull the Trigger podcast. I'm your host, Trigger, and I'm here with founding members of Trash Rocket, Hodge and Monster.
Hey!
And we are here today to talk about some hip-hop albums that I really, really, really enjoyed, especially in high school, and sort of giving them a new lease on life. There's De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, and... almost said Depeche Mode.
And Depeche Mode.
A Tribe Called Quest's Low End Theory. I don't know why I'm going to Depeche Mode today. Sorry, folks. But that's how it be sometimes.
Depeche Mode.
Yeah, Depeche Mode. I'm going to fall on Depeche Mode.
Depeche Mode.
I kind of wanted to do it because I think these albums stand out. And I know we're going to do some jazz albums later. I haven't figured out when, but what I like about both of these albums is they both involve elements of jazz and soul. As you were saying before we got started, you know, you hear James Brown a lot on 3 Feet High and Rising, and I genuinely think the way they sampled Tribe Called Quest's Low End Theory, I really haven't heard another album that's sampled that way. And I will say this, though, I'm kind of surprised this is the album that made Apple's list, and I get it is because I guess it's the first foray for Tribe Called Quest, and it was so much different than everything that was coming out. But if I was going to pick an album that I said, what's your best Tribe Called Quest album, I'm going with the next one, Midnight Marauders. So that's a killer album. But, yeah, I'm like complaining about an album that's still really, really good.
Yes.
I think I have all but one Tribe Called Quest album.
Oh, yeah.
And what I like is when you think about like musicians who stand out, right? Like they have a certain sound. Like Jimi Hendrix played an open E. He doesn't have to do anything crazy. That's Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, exactly.
Q-Tip, the minute he takes the mic, he's got a very... it's not like it's off-putting or so out there unique, but you know immediately that's Q-Tip. And you even think about it on the Beastie Boys, this track after Sabotage, Get It Together.
Yes.
It's just his flow is his flow, and I think that's my favorite song on Ill Communication is Get It Together. Yeah. Q-Tip again, he's pretty awesome in that regard.
Yeah, I do like his flow.
Yeah.
A lot.
I wish I had some more music news. This week was kind of quiet on the music news front, other than the guy who was involved in the artwork on an album of Nine Inch Nails that never saw the light of day.
Oh, yeah.
He put the album on Reddit. He was like, here's the MP3 of it.
It sounds really cool.
And it's... I guess it was the... I know you like Pearl Jam, right? Think of it like...
Five Against
With
One.
With Teeth is the album, and Five Against One is... like, this is that, you know, hidden album that... I knew it existed, and I don't know why the name is escaping me.
Bleed Through.
I knew it existed.
It's what they were hyping this album to be called, and it was With Teeth.
And I knew it existed.
Like the Pearl Jam thing.
Yeah, because there was a whole thing... because I remember reading online, there's a whole other album, guys, that it exists.
And I saved to my phone when you sent it. I was like, oh, this sounds great. I loved it from the first intro.
Like,
well,
it's With Teeth, and I said, except it's not.
It's not. It's definitely different. Not even all the tracks from With Teeth.
Yeah, no, it's like I would say it's like 50-50 With Teeth. And then the other tracks are, I would say, like way more guitar-driven. It's probably because they're not finished, I'm assuming, but I thought that was a... that was sort of my unique musical find. Just by sheer random, yesterday I went to Barnes & Noble and I was in the soundtrack section, and they had this weird soundtrack called Iron Maiden's Number of the Beast on vinyl.
That was in the soundtrack section?
Oh, that's funny. Well, that's Bruce's first album, isn't it?
That must have just gotten in the last week, because I looked through the soundtracks last weekend.
Yeah.
I would have known if I saw
Iron Maiden.
Yeah, that, you're right. That was Bruce's first foray.
That's Bruce's first record. That's what I thought.
Which worked, because where Steve was taking the music, they needed his range. The air raid siren he is.
And that, and what I also liked about Bruce Dickinson, he's, I'm not going to say, like, squeaky clean, But considering the guy he replaced, who was just a train wreck and completely unreliable, Paul
Di'Anno.
Yeah, you couldn't trust him because you didn't know what state he was going to be in. And Bruce Dickinson also saw this band as something that could go really far if they took it serious. And I think that was what the band needed. And you know, they have a lot of diversity in their albums.
Up the iron, well.
Kind of like Motorhead and AC/DC. If you like one, you like them all.
They have moments. Like their second to last album, they introduced for the first time piano, which I'd never realized wasn't done.
But yeah, it's one of those albums. And I will say this, though. I feel like Number of the Beast is definitely a little more cranked up than some of the other ones. Because I was listening to it again last night, and I remembered, first of all, the remaster, 2015 remaster, because this is not the picture discs from Walmart. This is an audio file grade 180.
Right.
It really kicks when they get really heavy. This album really, really rocks. I forgot how much that album rocked.
Woe to you, O Earth and Sea. Hey, there it is now.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Now, the only one I really, really want, and I still want it, is, again, it has the Trooper, it's Peace of Mind.
You did say that.
I think that is, like, the best Iron Maiden song ever. Like, that opening riff. I'm like, and I think, I guess before I die, I want to try to see, I guess I got to see one Iron Maiden show.
Well, you know, you heard about the European one they just announced, Run for Your Lives, which is going over their whole history. So it's bound to have an American one.
So that would be kind of
cool. I'm watching for it myself.
I would love to go see Iron Maiden. Because you know for a fact it's going to be entertaining. A
couple years ago, they weren't even detuned. He still hit everything. I mean, Number of the Beast, that whale is one thing, but he hit everything else.
That's crazy.
And Kevin always said, like, he's like the one legit singer that's out there based on some kind of an actual way of singing. He actually delivers, like, in an operatic way.
Yeah, that was one thing I've noticed about...
Or Freddie Mercury was listed, too.
Bruce seems to do... he's a pilot, right?
And he fences.
He fences. He's a cyclist.
Yeah, he's a cyclist.
Saw that. He has a really nice bike, by the way.
I bet he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a little bit, turned on by a bicycle.
Yeah.
Then
I want to ride that bike.
Hey!
And then, he's got like a PhD, right? I think. Now, I think he's
something,
Dr.
Yeah.
Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah.
Officially.
Bruce Dick.
Yeah.
Bruce Dick.
Sorry.
And I loved it. There was like this one thing on.
But he will speak his mind.
And they were like, what Iron Maiden sounds like to people who don't like it in 1865. Many people.
Right.
Because it's definitely, you're going to learn your history.
But they turn out, like, I remember just in English, like, Rhyming the Ancient Mariner is legit. If the teacher knows what you're talking about, you can use that if that poem is covered.
Yeah.
They do stuff, their songs, when you can use them, in education.
Yeah. Like, Run to the Hills, you could definitely use that in U.S. History 1, because that's definitely about the Trail of Tears. You're like, You're like, this song rocks, what's it about?
Well, the song still rocks.
Yeah. You're like, So let's talk about something a lot less depressing.
Oh, I thought we were all of a sudden doing a metal podcast.
Called Quest's Low End Theory. I know this was the higher ranked album of the two.
Yes.
I forget what the numbers are. I just knew that these two albums went together, and I felt like they should have been ranked similarly.
Sorry, breathing.
Because I felt like they had a similar appeal, and I feel they, because I mean, De La Soul came out in 89, so maybe by a couple years. This was 91, Notes for Listening CD.
Ooh, 10 year. The Pearl Jam's 10. The year 10 came out. 10 year, sorry.
Yeah. No, I got you saying,
So it's the first track was Excursions.
I think that one too, 91, yeah.
What I loved about this track, right off the bat, when you hear that bass line at the beginning, you automatically know that this is going to be something very unique, very different, very captivating. Again, doesn't really sound like anything I really heard before. Definitely mixes the past and the present. It's hip-hop comparing it to jazz. And like I said, that upright bass line gives that jazzy minimalist sound.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The track emphasizes the importance of storytelling and paying homage to the genre's roots. So one of the things that you will hear in a lot of Tribe Called Quest's albums is they never forget where they came from and they never forget where rap comes from. Mm-hmm. And they will make reference to it frequently. That's what I have on
that's
that
true,
one.
Yeah.
Do we have anything else we want to talk about with Excursions, other than the fact it's a killer track? This is another one of those albums. Not quite to where I was with Aretha Franklin, right, by any stretch of the imagination. That album melted my brain in a good way. But yeah, this one's a fun one to listen to.
And I liked it too. Like, I see, yeah, Excursions comes on, and I was like, sweet. You know, it just, I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting. I was new to this. I was aware of Q-Tip, and I'm sure I've heard Tribe Called Quest, you know, if nowhere, just through MTV or something, but I didn't at that conscious moment, you know, sit there and go, or consciously listen to
it. Well, think about it. I mean, think about songs he's in. D-Light.
Yeah, yeah.
Beastie Boys. And then their last album that they did.
I kept wondering if they had any influence at all on trip-hop at all.
Oh, for sure. They had to.
Because even in the way they get some of those bass lines going, mm-hmm, it's like,
the way they used the samples and the loops, there were some elements where you can hear a bit of it. I would even say in some of the Portishead's Dummy album.
Yeah.
And definitely in Massive Attack. And then Buggin' Out. Mm-hmm. This one has Fife Dawg as the main deliverer. One of the things you're going to notice about him is he uses confidence and humor to really make himself unique. His personality has always been something that's different. Again, one of the things that you're going to notice is the bass lines on this album are fantastic, and they built around that again. And of course Q-Tip comes in, and he's sort of being Q-Tip, and he's, I guess, reining in Fife's, like, craziness.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely feel like you can get a pretty good sense real quick that this is going to be something pretty special by at least track two, because you're already hearing two very different vocal deliveries.
Yeah.
And they work very well together. I like that. Anything else you want to add to that one?
Continue doing good. I know that. Yeah. I never felt any urge to skip track. I mean, not that we should anyway for this, but
yeah, no,
very good stuff. Yeah.
No, this is it. Like I said, this is a good, just, there's another thing that I noticed about this album. I don't know if you noticed it as well. Actually, kind of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
These are two albums that if you wanted to play it, like, low in the background, it could almost provide that, like, lo-fi beat sort of thing that you can, you know, study with and relax to and mellow out to. Or if you want to, like, really crank out the jams, you can turn it way up and
right,
it'll really work. And I feel
that's like a genre thing too, the lo-fi, and yeah, you could, yeah, you're not, for studying,
you're not hearing a lot of, I feel like, works however you want it to do. I guess it's the genius in the recording of this album. What's interesting is Q-Tip has always had issues with the way rap has been promoted, called out from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Track three, he starts off their first album, he's like, you know, guys, I don't think hip-hop should be commercialized for the sake of it being commercialized. Because of that, there's always going to be, you know, shady people in the background, as we've learned, especially now with artists like Janet Jackson, Britney Spears, Tiffany,
mm-hmm,
even in some cases Debbie Gibson, how they got, you know, taken to the ringer.
Mm-hmm.
Trent Reznor, again, selling 1 million copies of his first album and making $1,000 on it.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks, TBT.
Yeah. Q-Tip's basically saying the same thing. He's like, man, there's some shady promoters out there. The business side of this industry is, you know, is crap. Again, that laid-back jazz loop. You know, that one is very stripped down, but the bass is definitely like, It's weird because when you think of bass, you don't think of it being at all like, everyone says you can't have bass, you either have rhythm or and melody. And I just feel like, okay, maybe,
nice spit in the face
but I feel like that the melody here is definitely humming the bass tune.
Yeah, you're right. It's like, even with the samples, it's like, it's very stripped down.
Yeah.
But very good. Like, just notice the rhythms.
Yeah.
If nothing else, for every track, I was like, this is great.
Mm-hmm. But what I also...
Like, I want these sounds. I like the different snare sounds. Yeah. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, that's fine. But what I also noticed, sometimes when you get to some minimal albums, they can get kind of boring after a while if you don't, I guess, vary it up enough. And I feel here, there's enough variety to keep this album from getting too hands-on. Like, I remember the first time I listened to Block Rocket Beats by the Brothers, and it has that great bass line when it opens up, because it's a, I forget what it's sampled from. I know that's a sample,
but it keeps going.
Yeah, it's good for like 2.5 minutes, but when it's 6 minutes and 49 seconds of
there's not even like a pause, is there? No, they just hit play and
yeah, it just keeps going.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, though, I believe the album after that, that one was called "Come to Africa," right? That is my favorite by far Chemical Brothers album. I think that one's absolutely amazing. Speaking of the Chemical Brothers, the album after that features guess who? Q-Tip.
He didn't even let me enter. No.
So, yeah, Push the Button is what that song's called.
So, Q-Tip, if you're interested, we'll make a song work for you, the next Trash Rocket.
And that would be awesome.
Like, you know, putting it out there if you happen
to be sitting in there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to have to be in the recording.
You'll be there for that. We're going to have a special producer for that track.
Like that trigger. What are you going to do? I'm not going to do shit other than just.
I want to witness the.
Other than trying to get some of my Tranquil Quista photograph.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, yeah, I just remember from the get go. It was one of those things like, you know, I was definitely into rock music in high school, but I heard this album. And it was one of those things. It was kind of like when I heard Warren G's Regulate for the first time. It was like, okay, maybe I do like some hip hop. Mm-hmm. And then the Fugees really broke the door open for me. But again, that's another album that I really can't say, think of an album that sounds like it. It really isn't. So I guess, you know, standing out means something. Now again, Fife Dog comes back on Butter.
Whoa. What's up, Fife?
Butter.
Of course, you know, he's narrating his story and his experiences with women and growing up. Again, what I liked about it is he balances his playful delivery with his ability to tell a story, and his ability to be charismatic and yet somehow reflective. The soulful jazz sample that I kept feeling, and that goes with that beat that's nice and smooth. And what I liked about this track is it's brutally honest, but it's told in a way that doesn't sound painful. You know, because I mean, this could go in a Cure's Disintegration, if not told correctly, pretty quickly, but he did it. It's masterful storytelling, I would say.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to say that a lot with both of these albums.
It'll happen.
Like both the storytelling, the lyricism on these two albums are, I think, top notch. I'm going to say probably some of the best that I've ever heard from anybody in the 90s, any genre. I really think they took the lyrics seriously, and it shows.
I wish a lot of that was still around.
Yeah, and I was sitting there listening to this and the other album, and I said, you know, I wish there was. It goes back to that. You know, they don't record albums that way, and I know I'm sounding old, but I wish there was more hip hop albums like this. Those are the ones on I'm Cool Like This, I'm Cool Like That, I'm Cool Like This. All right.
Is that the one I was just thinking about? I was trying to remember who does. What's the name of that artist that's like bitty bitty bop? They were really big about using real instruments too.
Yeah.
And Arrested Development, I guess, even.
But yeah, and you think about Arrested Development, another one.
Yeah, actually, Arrested.
Unique. I mean, I can't think of anybody that sounds like Arrested Development.
No.
And they were here and then they were gone, and it was a shame because, again, they were.
You know, I looked them up, they are still around touring. They make albums, yeah.
But you don't hear them.
But you don't hear them.
They're here and gone. And the amazing thing, not on the list, and they should have been, I think.
Yeah.
Because, again, they were pretty big. Another rap act that didn't make the list that kind of surprises me is Bone Thugs and Harmony. Because I remember how big Crossroads was. Everyone was singing that in high school. But, you know.
And that.
But again, that was also. Bone Thugs and Harmony wasn't necessarily my style of music, but I appreciated it for, like, again, when you hear it, you know right off the bat who it is. So, next up, Verses from the Abstract. This is my favorite track on this album by a lot. Again, introspection. I guess maybe I just like songs that are reflective and when you look inside. But again, Q-Tip, it's just effortless, right? And the warm beats, the jazzy feels. And of course, Ron Carter's on bass on this particular track. If you're a jazz person, you know that Ron Carter's one of the best to ever put his fingers on bass, period. Definitely gives you the authenticity of the jazz influences. It's so personal. Okay, it was personal, it was poetic, and it was showing Q-Tip's ability to tell a story. It was what I got here. Again, I feel the storytelling here, it almost would be interesting. I hate to say it, I think Bob Dylan made the list.
Yes.
I would almost like to compare A Tribe Called Quest lyrically, at least side by side the lyrics of A Tribe Called Quest album to a Bob Dylan album, because both of those. They both have a lot to say. Now I'm going to say Bob Dylan's voice is a little... it's not quite as bad for me as, you know, Billy Corgan's voice, but his ability to tell story is fantastic. It was the same thing with Billy Corgan. Like, I really want to like Smashing Pumpkins because I hear the melodies and... and, man, they're put together so well.
Right.
And the music's great.
Tonight, I can... he doesn't... get quite as greedy on that song, so I can deal with his voice a bit. The video on that's phenomenal. The story told is phenomenal. But the
my Ollie, when he first heard Bullet with Butterfly Wings, he said, "No, turn it off. I can't do it."
Nope, that's the
same. Voice.
Yeah, I said, "Okay, baby."
Because musically, it's great.
Yeah, but you know that's the same. But that's where I'm at too. Like, I can't get past
the world voice. Is a vampire.
And the thing is, when I hear him talk. He's got to be throwing his voice.
Like, listen to that, like some of that podcast. Yeah, just listen to him talking.
Yeah, he's got to throw his voice. I mean, he's just like, I want it to stand out so I'll sound terrible. That's what I'm figuring. But, man, I heard James, with his solo album. And it's,
when James put it, James, yeah, it's like, why did he not?
Decent, yeah, but his ability to sing is so much better.
Why is he not the vocalist?
Like, Billy, dude, if you want to control the band, you do you, but let him sing, because he's way better at it.
And Billy said, "Nah, it's about me."
Yeah, and it's definitely about him. When he is not short of confidence.
True.
He's not short of confidence.
Oh, right. Like, he will automatically say he's the best living from the 90s with Kurt Cobain gone.
The most thoughtful.
Remember how he said he was like...
in the songwriting.
Yeah. He basically wrote Beautiful Day for you too.
That's like, no.
I'm like, no, you didn't. Because I showed him the chord structure. That is a very stereotypical U2 chord structure.
You can't own chords either.
I mean, it's not like...
chord says.
Well, actually, we will get into that. You can own chords if you're John Coltrane, because there's literally a...
you got with a really crazy
progression
one.
Progression called the Coltrane progression.
I thought you were going to say Gene Simmons.
I'm going to talk about that.
Own chord progression.
It's interesting. I guess we'll get back to it. It kind of relates to this.
Okay.
So John Coltrane, of course, has albums with Miles Davis before he goes solo, and he's recorded with Rudy Van Gelder, and he records Blue Train with Rudy Van Gelder on Blue Note. I want to say that was like the one Blue Note album he's on. Atlantic signed him, and he releases like 3 or 4 albums in a very short amount of time. And I got Giant Steps which I know is considered, by all technical aspects, probably the most difficult song to play on, or most difficult album to play on saxophone ever. Mm. And it is complex. The problem is, though, Rudy Van Gelder didn't produce or engineer it, and that album just doesn't have that that you get when you hear a Rudy Van Gelder record. He just really understood, I guess, you know, like microphones, put them real close to the instrument, run a lot of compression, and, you know, it'll get rid of the noise floor. That would be his masterpiece, Giant Steps, if Rudy Van Gelder had recorded it. It would be Love Supreme. Because, don't get me wrong, Love Supreme is definitely not an easy album to play by any stretch of the imagination. I'm sitting there listening to that, and I looked at some of the sheet music and where it was note-wise. Like, oh, you went from there to here, to there, to here. Oh, in the span of two measures.
In the span of two measures.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, your piano player must love you. Oh man! Luckily, well, I was McCoy Tyner. He was fine.
Yeah.
So we get back into it. Show business, and I guess, I guess I've been thinking about jazz this entire time.
Yes.
Again,
I think about jazzercise sometimes.
I've never jazzercised. I've always wondered how that would work. Is the jazz I listen to...
How do I exercise to this?
Can't you just play the right notes? I'm just kidding.
How many tempo changes are
I'm kidding, I'm kidding.
This song? About 76. Well, how long is it? Oh, it's only 12 and a half minutes. Well, what's the next song? 23.
Right.
That's some change. It's like that album and what Pink Floyd's Animals. What is it, like five tracks on that album?
Oh.
And yet it's very long.
Oh my God, yeah. The second was Dogs, I believe. It's at 17 minutes and 46 seconds.
Let's beat that. Let's do four songs.
Four songs, yeah. Need two discs.
Hold on. Hey, guys.
Yeah, that's...
That would not be at least a long track, but...
But Show Business, again, you get Brand Nubian, Diamond D on it, as some guest stars. It's more funk-based, is what I got. But the... Again, when we talk about that complexity of emotions and how music and the lyrics don't match, and I said that the Cure's Disintegration is the masterpiece of that. Is when you listen to Pictures of You, if you listen to it instrumentally, you're not going to think, oh, this is going to be a gut-wrenching song. And then Robert just sucks your soul dry. There you go. This song, in a sense, though, kind of is like that, too, because when you listen to the lyrics, wow, it's pretty dark. Doesn't seem to have a lot of, not in the love sense, but, you know, they're not very trusting of the music industry. But it's got that funky upbeat sample, and again, I feel like that is intentional and it works. All right, I feel like we should keep moving.
Okay.
Vibes and Stuff.
Nice title.
What's interesting is, like, now everyone's like, I just want to see if we vibe. Tribe Called Quest was worrying about vibing back in 91.
Yeah.
Well, it's another one of those tracks. Again, if you played it, like, nice and quiet, it used to be a perfect study song. Because it's very laid back, very chill. Very thoughtful again, though. And again, Q-Tip's just, like, so reflective and emphasizing the importance of staying true to oneself amid external pressures. And you have to think about when this came out, like a lot of teenagers again, you know, we're just past the Just Say No movement.
Yeah.
Judge your bad, okay?
Judge your bad, very, very bad. I feel like the Just Say No movement did more to damage. Than it did to fix anything.
Well, you know, you can't get an old white lady to
yeah.
these problems.
I feel like we need to have honest discussions because, yes, drugs are bad, but we need to express, well, why? not just...
It's always a Band-Aid. We always try to put a Band-Aid on things.
And, you know...
That's what we do.
And that's if they keep Band-Aids in stock. Yeah. Sorry.
None out of ABC.
And let's not forget the fact that most of the time drug arrests are based around race.
Yep.
So
they put, I mean, so many.
Yeah.
Black men away.
And I feel, you know, it's all about staying true to yourself. In this case, these guys are, you know, big time into music.
Right.
The next track, I don't know if we want to keep talking about vibes and stuff, but the next one is where it gets really, like, heavy. Lyrically.
Mm-hmm.
So do we want to go there or we like get to track 8?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
and
it's fine.
Date Rape.
Oh, yes.
This is a song that I don't think you'd expect to hear in 91. And I think we need to have these conversations as men more, men to men, because the you know, women have told us long enough, hey, you know, respect us, that, you know, at this point, like, you're not going to hear it. You need to hear it from someone. Someone's got to stand up on our side and say, hey, you know, maybe stop catcalling. I've got a question for you. When has that ever worked? Oh, never.
Never.
So, but in this case, again, it's a very progressive message, talking about consent, respect, and what they did here was they delivered such a serious message and they simplified the music to make those lyrics take center stage. Mm. Which right off the bat, they're willing to talk about issues that I feel we can talk about and they will be very important. Mm-hmm. And something that most guys can take away from a guy's perspective, hey, this is why this is not okay. You know, I feel like that, you know, the pretty simple thing is your mama brought you into this world, she can take you out. But, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Do we want to continue or do we want to go to the standout single, which is the next track?
Let's do it.
Check the rhyme. This is...
I really did like this. Did not know this was the single. Yeah. I like this.
And definitely, again, the back and forth between Q-Tip and Fife is just, it's amazing.
Is this the one where they were even sing each other's names on the chorus?
Yeah.
Like, that was the trade-off?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I like that a lot. Very catchy.
It's very catchy. It's horn-driven, nostalgic lyrics about being, growing up as childhood friends and then becoming hip-hop legends, which they probably weren't quite there yet. I would say after Midnight Marauders, they're, you know, well on their way. They just, what I liked about it is, while they never really came back to this style of album, they never really sounded like anyone else, and they never, ever tried to sound like anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of, you know, bummed that they were no longer in existence.
Mm-hmm.
Their last album was a banger, so...
Good time to go out.
Yep. Anything we want to add to Check the Rhyme?
Very enjoyable.
Okay. So Everything is Fair was track 10. Now, I feel that this particular album or particular track goes in a very topic that, you know, a lot of the gangster rap would use.
Mm.
But they tell it in so much of a different way.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good at communicating it in a highbrow way. That was the one thing I've always liked about Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul was I just felt like that their albums were on a higher wavelength than so many albums of the time as far as like the intelligence required to listen to them. And a lot of that, you know, when I think of like Kendrick Lamar's albums, you really have to listen to it, you know, in the guise that he's telling a story. In this case, they're, you know, making you think about it maybe differently than if you were just being told the story of, like, say, Ice Cube, who was very, very visual in his lyrics.
Yes.
Silence. The street life, society issues, the impact of economic struggles on an urban community. That funky bass line, that smooth jazz sample, that's top notch.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I really haven't, like I said, I don't think I really had any tracks here I disliked. It's one of those albums you can kind of just press play. You have any thoughts on?
Still going.
Jazz. We've
jazz.
Got an ode to jazz music and its influence on hip-hop. And this track exemplifies the album's fusion of the two genres. It's lush. It's melodic. The bass line is just nice. The slick horns set the mood. Q-Tip and Fife again. They celebrate the art of rhyming over jazz-infused beats. Real quick, I just want to point out that if you listen to popular music anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere, you got to think jazz, because it's the foundation of all of it. So they obviously pay note to it, and I feel like more discussion should be brought onto that. And I feel King Oliver is an act who came about in the Harlem Renaissance, who we seemingly forgot about, and he's the guy who discovered Louis Armstrong. He's the guy who discovers Bessie Smith. And those are the people I talk about when I teach history. And I was thinking about that when I was listening to this track, and I said, we really need to, give credit to where credit is due. They do a fantastic job of it. Like I said, I'm still, chilling out to this album. I'm digging it. That was it. The next track, though, Sky Pager, this is where I was really struggling to come up with words to describe it other than, it was humorous, it was lighthearted, and they were talking about using pagers a lot, which I guess, probably then, because, they're from New York, right, I think, so this would be a city thing. Pagers were probably all the rage by then. I know
yes.
they've become the rage, still, mid-90s, late-90s.
Yeah. Still there, 97, 98.
Everyone had to have a pager.
I remember having them.
Nothing like having a pager. You get a page, and then you knew someone was trying to get a hold of you, and then you, okay. It was one of those things we all had to have it, but it really wasn't well thought up. Like, what do I need this? Well, okay, so now I just got to go find a phone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. So, hey, phones or phone.
This is where even I was like asking ChatGPT, I was like, what should I add to this? And it basically gave me, you said all you needed to say. Cool. Thanks, ChatGPT. What?
Okay.
What? Yeah. Track 13 of What? Rhetorical questions are the name of the game here. Challenging listeners to think about life's contradictions, its ironies. Again, it's very minimalistic. It's got abstract lyrics. It's fun. It's thought-provoking. It's a masterpiece from Q-Tip.
Thank you, Mr. Q-Tip.
Yeah. I feel like I'm just saying a lot of the same things.
It's kind of like why. Yeah.
With earbuds on, drawing, and it was just lovely. Like, my head was popped.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice. It was super nice.
And then, of course, the last track features a young rapper who kind of made it big later, Busta Rhymes. who, again, is another artist who really didn't sound like anybody. Like,
no.
You hear his delivery. A, it's fast, but what is so unique about it is fast and staccato. And he emphasizes beats not on a 4-4 pattern
right.
when he's delivering, even if the song is 4-4, which is wild to me. Somehow he makes it work. But yeah, there's that. Again, it's this one's probably like, isn't it like the, I felt like this is sort of like the most energetic song on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Leaders of the New School, of course, at that point, that was, Busta Rhymes was in that group. It's high energy. dynamic wordplay, it's energetic delivery. A lot of people seem to think this is one of the more iconic rap tracks of all time. I was looking at it. They said it's one of the best closers of any rap album of all time.
For like a last track.
I would not disagree.
He's not disagreeing.
Yeah, it's a strong, strong track.
Less than that inside your eye to show you where I came
come
from.
Yeah. So, do we want to say anything on that, or do we want to go to final thoughts?
I don't know. I like that it reminded me of, Bono's baseball. Bono's football.
Bono's.
I like that it reminded me. Of,
is that weird? For a split second, I thought you were talking about Sonny Bono until I realized what you said. Like, oh, like Bo Jackson.
Oh, no, it was trees.
Oh, yeah.
But the
Sonny Bobo.
the final thoughts. Little in Theory again. It's a landmark album.
Greatly enjoyed it.
It blends jazz, blends hip hop. A lot of people. I was going through what other reviewers had said, because I was really struggling to come up with something to say. I don't know if it was the mood that I was in when I was listening to it. This week has been, it's been off. A lot of people seem to express that it was a standard bearer. It leveled up where you had to be when it came to producing rap albums, and where you had to be as far as writing lyrics, especially on the East Coast. And I thought about it. I was thinking of all the rap from the East Coast at the time. And you have Beastie Boys, right?
Yes.
You have Run DMC. Those are big ones.
Right.
And even that, though, they're not at that level lyrically. I would venture to say that this album is probably the one that kind of pushed the Beastie Boys to do stuff like Check Your Head and Ill Communication. Because, again, they had, Paul's Boutique, an album that we have to do later. I was listening to that the other day just to see why it ranked so high. Mm-hmm. There is a boatload of samples in that record. I want to say there's like 300. Ironically, in like one track, was it the, not Johnny Royale, the track with Eggman? What, I've never thought you would sample Pink Floyd and Curtis Mayfield on the same track.
Oh, yeah.
Dust Brothers decided that's what we're going to do.
Hey.
I guess we got to transition a little bit here. Even though the album's similar, if you own the original, the next album, it's probably worth a little coin. The remaster, it took a long, 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 long time to happen. And the reason is, when this album was released, it was 1989. Back then, samples, they just kind of happened. Eventually, no artist decided they wanted to get paid, rightfully so, for using their music. And this album has over 60 samples on it. And if you have to pay, $100,000 here or there for six, that adds up pretty quick. And there are some samples on there from acts that I know want, $2 to $3 million per sample. So that was probably an issue there. In fact, it would have cost $22 million
if it was that.
What?
To get every sample cleared on this particular album.
Oh, wow.
So that's why it never went to streaming until 2023, and that's why the version that we have now is two samples down. Tommy Boy sells the records. You all remember Tommy Boy Records?
Mm-hmm.
That's no longer a thing. They sold to BMG in 2022. Obviously, BMG had the money. They're like, well, we got $22 million. And we think we can make that back, which I find odd because in the days of streaming, and I feel it's very, very hard to make your money back when making an album. I feel like
oh, for sure.
You gotta sell I mean, you basically have to stream, you have to convince every one of your 8 million fans to stream your album nonstop all day for like 4.5 months.
Well, I think you can we've made $11 so far.
Don't spend it all in one place.
Try not to.
$11.
I wonder if the thing with the samples was why. Do you remember years ago, I don't know how many years when De La Soul, maybe it was before streaming, suddenly just put all their albums for free on their website for a day or so. And I was like, oh, I wish I'd known when they did that.
Well, that was part of the
they pulled
reason.
It down. I guess, hey, if it's free.
Eddie Murphy is sampled on the Magic Number, and he's obviously not on this version of it. Now, the interlude Cool Breeze on the Rocks is longer because it has a sample that was not cleared in negotiations. So that being said, I wouldn't say skip the remaster. I will say that it sounds really good. Notes for listening. Remastered vinyl, and they're pink. They're very pink records.
Really?
Very, okay. Very pink. Like, pinker than that pink.
Whoa. I mean, if you all could see this pink.
Yeah. And I was a little bit nervous.
What do they call that? Like a hot pink?
Or
like
Bret
Hart's tights started to get.
I would say. Yeah, it's definitely pushing more.
Electric pink, maybe?
Yeah,
maybe that's the word.
Very, very electric.
Yeah. Okay. I really needed to know. Y'all could tell.
So it made me a little bit nervous because I spent a good. The coin to get the record, and I saw pink, and I said, oh man, if this record sounds like crap, I'm going to be pissed. It does not.
Okay. Only if it's green.
Maybe if they're you're figuring on a way to use different color records.
Mm-hmm. But it usually does affect the
color. Iron Maiden Power Slave picture disc. No.
It's fun to look at.
Yeah.
Still want to get the 1080 grand or something.
Yeah, well, I was going to say this is a 180 gram audio file. I know it's not. It doesn't sound good at all.
If you put a picture on it.
The CD sounds way better.
Yes.
So I'm going to stick with that one. Somewhere Else in Time.
Or Somewhere in Time.
Somewhere in Time.
I'm kidding. It's fine.
You know what I mean. That one's okay. But the one that I got in the black vinyl yesterday, Number of the Beast, oh my god, sounds fantastic. But De La Soul, you managed to release a record on colored vinyl, and it sounds great. So thank you, De La Soul.
Hey.
Was it the color of the pink in their album?
I believe so.
It's pretty.
Yeah, it's very, very pink. I think I have that album. I think I've uploaded it to my Instagram. I've been trying to put albums up on there that I've been listening to.
And that's close to a Barbie pink, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very pink. As Hodge was mentioning at the beginning with...
Don't blame me.
before we got started, he said, man, I didn't realize this was a game show.
Oh, yeah, I did say that.
And it is. It's like a game show style skit. It's playful. But what I liked about this record... I guess the main difference between this album and the one we just listened to is there's not too much on this album that's very serious. Now, obviously, they changed that direction big time on the next record.
Oh.
De La Soul Was Dead, very serious record.
Okay.
But also another brilliant album.
Yeah.
6 Feet Under, Dead and Serious.
Yeah, so I mean...
Yeah.
But the...
High Horizon.
Yeah.
Right.
So they have...
Good point.
The album, it's opening with that... It's humorous.
Yeah.
What I liked about this album... I wouldn't say it's quite psychedelic in nature, but it's definitely more colorful than a lot of albums. Even rock albums at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The Magic Number, again, samples Schoolhouse Rock. Emphasizes unity and positivity. It's got catchy hooks. It's playful. Again, it's going to show you that the group is not conventional. It's also going to show you that the group wants to have a lot of fun. And I am all about that. Like I said, I'm really into it. And I felt it went nicely into track 3.
Mm-hmm.
So, which was Change and Speak. It was built on funk. emphasizes wordplay, lyrical creativity. The abstract rhymes reflect on the group's unique take on hip-hop. And they were trying to show you how this album's going to be different, because they are different. They have different influences, and it shows. But again, these two records definitely on the cut-and-paste variety style, similar with Paul's Boutique. It's sort of the same era, right? 89.
Yeah. Yep.
So, even though I think Paul's Boutique isn't that their lone West Coast album, I think. They recorded that in California.
I remember that from that documentary that the surviving members did. Yeah.
Totally flopped. And now it's considered their masterpiece.
Yeah. Well, that's how it goes sometimes.
But
some people just aren't ready.
I don't know. I still think the album after that one blew my mind.
I see. I think Paul's Boutique is not what like Pet Sounds was at Beach Boys. Not so much a flop, but eh. And then now it's hey.
Yeah. Well, see.
Check Your Head is awesome. Though.
Check Your Head is amazing. And here's the thing. Hello, Nasty. I felt very similar to this album. It has those colorful moments.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I thought that was... It was downhill for them after that album. I don't feel like they topped their creativity of that record. But again, you know, you have to think about where they come from, New York, the time period.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of makes sense that they all have similar sort of cut and paste production. Change and Speak, again, was, I thought, pretty unique. And then we go on to the interlude, Cool Breeze on the Rocks. Again, it's like 30-something seconds shorter than the one I originally heard.
Ah, okay.
I'm pretty sure I have this CD somewhere. I'm pretty sure I bought it. It's definitely a lot of samples. It's a lot of samples. Creative use of sound bites. Next track is one I really like. Is Can You Keep a Secret? Very experimental. They sort of humorously reveal secrets about each other. Playful. It's lighthearted.
Yeah.
And you can definitely tell like De La Soul were very tight knit. This was not just a group of people who decided, hey, we're going to rap. These are friends who genuinely enjoy each other's company, and I feel like you can hear that on this particular record.
Good point.
Ironically, I don't know if you all got throwbacks to this a bit, but I did. I remember back when Nickelodeon used to show music videos, because, you know, MTV.
Mm-hmm.
It was Nicktoons or Nick Rocks or whatever. It was like 6:30 to 7 o'clock, you get like 4 music videos.
Oh.
Okay. And the Fat Boys were like regulars on that show. And I want to say the Fat Boys are probably my first hip-hop act that I ever really liked. And I kind of got the throwback to them because they were also sort of a playful group.
Yes.
Obviously, De La Soul, way better lyricists. Tribe Called Quest, way better lyricists. But I got sort of the same sort of fun vibe. This song made me think of the Fat Boys a bit.
Just okay.
And the fact that it was, hey, they're close and they're getting together and they're having a good time and they sort of reveal each other's secrets and, you know, I was like, man, that's cool. But again, that's a bonding moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Before. Now.
Oh, okay.
If there is a serious track, maybe it's this one, but even it's got a lot of humor in it. It's Jennifer Taught Me, Derwin's Revenge. It's a cautionary tale about young love and being infatuated with someone else. It mixes storytelling, funky beats. Again, they like telling stories. This particular track is definitely narrative driven. It involves humor, I guess, to sort of lighten it up a little bit. Anything you want to add there?
Which one are we? Jennifer Taught Me. I don't know. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. You saw, you know, it was one of those things that I definitely got into. When we go on to Ghetto Thang, which again, you know,
that one stuck out for me too.
Yeah. It's a serious.
ETTO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a serious track, mm-hmm. right? Poverty, urban struggles. Again, the contrast. It's good, and I feel that it keeps. When you talk about stuff this serious, you can go in a direction that just totally buzzkill, and they.
Yeah.
And this is a song that I guess also kind of reminded me a bit more of the De La Soul record, because Chocolate Quest record, because it was laid back, very jazzy. You know, the lyrics are very socially conscious, but they did it in a way that it's not going to like scare you away.
Right.
So we've got that. Anything we want to add to that?
Oh, man. What about you, Hodge?
I just liked it. Right? You had said it stuck out for you. Like.
Yeah. I
the next track.
He's probably already covered it now.
Yeah, the next track. Well, I don't really said that much. Next track, first thing I noticed, the Turtles are sampled.
Oh. Yeah. Right.
Show me how to do exactly what you do.
He's here all night, fans.
Yeah. That song's been sampled a lot.
We need to figure out what makes people think of samples and write those songs.
I know. I think about that.
Because, see, I remember...
All right.
About 8 years later, there was a song, The Playboy Mansion by U2, who samples it.
The same Turtles? Oh.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to that album the other day. That album gets way too much shit. It's not a bad album. I mean, there's some songs on there that need some work. But yeah. I'll still take that one over Zeuropa any day of the week. Sorry.
Which one are we talking about? Pop?
Pop.
Oh, yeah, because they'll say that for album wasn't even finished. Yeah. They already had a tour set up.
Yeah. Why would you set up a tour before you had the album?
Because we are YouTube.
Yeah. It was a fun show, though.
Oh, yeah, I looked like it there. That's what the, coming out of the lemon?
Yeah, they came out, it was a lemon, and the lemon drops, and it's like shooting lemon juice out in the crowd. And then it's a great big disco ball, and then the thing opened up, and it was a secondary stage, and they started playing discotheque.
Wow.
I mean, it was crazy as shit. And I just remember seeing... this television screen, because it was quote the world's largest television, and I remember saying that ain't that big, and then the band came out and they were ants.
That's perspective. Okay.
And then it turned into the world's largest karaoke machine when Edge comes out and sings Daydream Believer. I mean, when I'm saying that this concert was like over the top,
that's an album that should have been on here, the Monkees.
Yeah. Prefab for.
Yeah.
No, not funny. No. I think
that's. Oh, I was about to say, yeah. Let's
yeah.
Great really, album.
Yeah. Daydream Believer. Yeah, that's a great song. I used to do that karaoke all the time.
I think Carly Simon wrote a lot of their songs.
Probably. But yeah, that was a. Yeah.
Ah, the pop tour.
But yeah, sorry, the Turtles got me all sidetracked.
It happens, man. Turtles have that effect.
Yeah,
it wasn't me. It was definitely.
It was the Turtles.
The Turtles.
Did I even call what this track was? It's called Transmitting Live from Mars, folks.
Oh, hey.
I'm just totally shooting the crap here.
They were transmitting even back then.
Yeah, it's an instrumental interlude, so I'm just like rambling on a song that there wasn't even rap.
Yeah, I thought the lyrics were really interesting for this one.
Yeah.
They definitely blend the genres pretty well, though.
I was going to say, they blended the vocals in really well.
Yeah. Now, the next track, I don't know if you've heard it, but it's definitely two very, very different artists that got sampled.
Uh-huh.
Steely Dan and Otis Redding.
I heard Otis Redding, but I'm not so familiar with Steely Dan, I guess.
Yeah, so I was... That's a choice.
Yeah.
So, again, it's about positivity. It's about love. It's bright. It's melodic. And it's got a catchy chorus, which is probably the first time you can ever say catchy and Steely Dan in the same sentence.
Try it again.
So, it's definitely a standout track on this on this album.
Yeah.
And then, we have anything we want to add to that? Because the next song I thought was kind of funny.
Go for it.
I'll just take it off. And it was talking about materialism and superficiality. They basically they were saying, don't be, you know, too hooked up on labels on your clothing and too hooked up on labels for yourself and pretenses of what you think of other people and whatnot. And, you know, just sort of let that stuff go. And it was, I mean, there's some good points to be made there. But again, what I liked about this is they never tell it in a way that it's so heavy that, you know, it's like, if you don't do this, you're going to be sad, miserable. Mm-hmm. And they just, you know, try to keep it fun. And,
like good parents do.
Yeah. So it's playful, it's funky, and, you know, they use humor to tell a serious message. And they did it really well. And they do it really well in this album, I think, in general. Because, again, the next song, it's a little bit of soap. All right? Now, this, me being a middle school teacher, I feel like this should be, like, required learning.
Oh, okay.
For some of my students. Yes.
Go ahead. Tell us.
Soap. Yeah. Deodorant.
Yeah.
Wait. Oh, just about washing.
No, I go into my kid's room and it smells.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, like, it's like you just came from PE. Did you put on deodorant? No.
No. Why?
don't think you should. Like, why do you say that? Let's just put it this: if you were to take your shirt off right now, it would stand on its own.
You stanky.
Yeah. I'm like, So I finally started. I keep like emergency sticks.
Oh, okay.
For some of my kids who I'm like, hey man, like if I get a complaint from another kid, I can usually pull out the signs, you know, like, hey, why don't you go to the bathroom real quick, take care of that.
I also have antibacterial wipes.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but definitely, like, I'm like, just trust me, this will make your life easier. Right. It'll make the other kid's life easier.
Yes. Like, this isn't what y'all want to be talking about.
No.
Y'all want to be talking about something else.
Yeah, y'all don't want to be talking about how he's stanky.
Right.
Stank.
And we're now getting into that time period because March is fast approaching.
Oh, yes.
It starts warming up. And, of course, you know, I teach sixth graders, so hormones start popping live.
Yes, sir.
So, well, I'm not going to forewarn you then.
What a nice aroma.
Sixth grade, this is the easy point. And from seventh grade, they totally do not devolve into something that you forgot and totally don't recognize. But they come back, I promise you. They come back. But you just got to get through that.
It's hard. It's hard.
Because I'm teaching some kids that I had last year, this year, my speech classes.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that's seventh grade.
I have a sixth and seventh grader.
Yeah.
I got both of those. Yeah. It's a house.
That's seventh grade attitude.
With my almost 16-year-old.
I was going to say, and a 16-year-old.
Yeah, good time.
Yeah, well, it gets better.
I'm looking forward to it.
Bring it on.
Yeah, the seventh graders, they start to transition out of that seventh grade attitude a little bit towards like April and May. Mm-hmm. But right now, they're full throat. And I'm like, oh my word. Like, everything is, you know, fighting. I guess you're, you know, trying to find that independence, and of course, you know.
Right, and you got a lot of them. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, that's when the brain really starts to change. It's like, wait a minute, we gotta be adults here.
It's the second fastest time of growth in your brains.
Yep, it's hard.
I'm still waiting.
Treading water. We're treading water.
Honestly, your time will come.
This song.
Yay.
You're a drawer, not a shower.
This song is
okay.
I feel like the song has been my week treading water.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
County came back and said, you know, make sure you have 9 grades in your grade book by the end of the week. We've had 4 days of school in the last 2 weeks. Now, mm-hmm. How am I supposed to get 3 grades out of that? Especially when you're expecting this project.
They tell
you guys get 100 for not being here.
Yeah.
That's what I say. Can you do that?
Well, we'll see. We'll have to take a look at the project grade and see. Animal metaphors are used here. Life lessons, perseverance, self-awareness, whimsical storytelling, all of that's there. It's laid back, it's jazzy, it's groovy. That's all I really had on that particular track. Again, and I feel bad that we're doing this podcast and I have so little notes on albums I really like. I guess, you know, some days I'm good, some days I'm not.
It happens.
Potholes on My Lawn. This is one of the very first singles that this from De La Soul.
Oh yeah.
It's addressing plagiarism, stealing ideas. Potholes represent gaps left by those who copy their styles. You know, I guess that, you know, there's something to be said there, but you know, when you're sampling other people's music too. Okay. Do you want to know what? Almost everything's stolen or borrowed or lifted. So,
true.
I guess I can't get so.
There are no new ideas.
No. I mean, daggone on our national anthem, that's lifted. So. Mm-hmm. So.
So's our president.
Yeah. Say no go.
No go.
Socially conscious track about drug abuse. I can't go for that. No can do. Hall & Oates. I heard that in there. I heard that same.
Yeah, good call.
It's danceable. And of course, this is the Just Say No song. But they do it in a much more effective way, I feel, than we were told in the 1980s. Mm. Of course, remember, you know, you had, what was it, Dare?
Mm-hmm. Dare,
I always
look
forward
yes.
to Dare Day because it was, not because we were learning anything new, it was the fact that we weren't doing schoolwork.
Hey!
Like a guest presentator come in and he had stuff and he would show us, and of course, you know, Captain ADHD here, mm-hmm. Deeds visuals.
Captain ADHD!
I thought you were being clever by asking these weird questions. And, you know, like 90% of what they were telling you was, of course, bullshit. But
oh.
So.
But yeah.
Yep.
So they, you know, weed will kill you. I can tell you, alcohol.
Right, but did they talk about alcohol?
Not really.
No.
Mm.
Smoking, didn't talk about that.
Uh-uh.
I know damn well I'll kill people. So, like, I, you know, proof of that myself. So, but yeah, they didn't talk about any of that. Not that I'm saying do dope, kids. Don't. I'm just saying that.
Be informed.
Be informed. And also understand why it's criminalized and understand who they were targeting.
Mm-hmm. Because crack is more years.
Yep.
Then
they call marijuana the longest time jazz grass or something like that.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah,
rude.
Even that goes back to.
Isn't that one of our new songs?
Stuff like that. No. Do As De La Does.
Mm-hmm.
It's a skit.
A good
I
lesson.
Think it's hilarious. I've always loved it. Yeah, it shows how quirky they are, how unique they are, how they're very free-spirited. And then got a few more tracks here. Plug Tuning. Last Chance to Comprehend. This What I like is this song is reworked for this album.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is the single of it, it's a little bit different. This song was so, for me, I remember the first time I heard it, like, it was tough because it's so stream of conscious thought.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really, yeah, it doesn't sound like it's written as much as they just turn the microphones on and hope for the best.
Oh, okay.
But you know what? I like it. It's great. In that aspect now, it's one of those things I feel that I got older, I can appreciate it more. This is one of those songs. It's hypnotic a bit. It's complex wordplay. I would say groundbreaking simply because I don't think I've ever heard anything that sounded like it from that time period. Anything else we want to add to that? I feel like we go more into shock value for the song title of the next track.
Okay.
But it's not really... the title, it's not what the song is. De La Orgy. Satirical tongue-in-cheek interlude again.
Mm-hmm.
It's exaggerated stereotypes. It's provocative. It's humorous. But it also wants to show that, you know, they're not going to be confined by... certain styles. Moving on to Buddy. The Native Tongues Collective is on this track. Jungle Brothers were on it. Q-Tip is on it. What's kind of ironic is, you know, they already knew Q-Tip was going to be something 2 years before they really got their album's going. Again, friendship, community, that's so important. It's funky, it's playful. Again, Q-Tip's on it so naturally. It's one of the best tracks on the album. What do we have there? I just feel like...
It was nice having him there.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not doing these albums justice because I really didn't know what to say other than I really like these tracks.
They're really good examples of just listen to them.
Yeah.
They really are. They're fun experiences as albums.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, too. Both of these are great albums.
Yeah.
Like, everything works together so well. And I wish...
The flow was great. Yeah.
I guess I wish we had more albums. Someone other day messaged me and said that they didn't think there was enough albums.
The Inner Sound, y'all.
Albums?
Daisy.
On what? The list? Or our podcast?
And just in general, sorry. There's not enough albums.
Oh, gotcha.
It's like, you know, 3 or 4 singles and 30 to 40 minutes of filler. And
Oh, especially like nowadays.
Yeah. And
yeah,
you know what?
Right,
I can't really disagree with a lot of that. I hate it when I hear like a song and you're like, this is so clearly a single. And then you hear the next track, it's not even, you can tell I didn't even bother halfway producing it. You're just like, eh, slap.
Oh, yeah, well, even the production sounds different.
Britney Spears, you know, passed on this one.
Yeah.
You know, blah, 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 passed on this
one. Yeah. We don't want it.
So, it didn't work.
It's like, you know what, man, you got a rough track. Eh, bump up the bass a little bit, throw it on there, we'll be good. you can tell it. Ironically, though,
only once does it, at a Blue Moon, does that ever become like, oh, that ends up being the big hit.
Yeah.
Africa, Toto.
Yeah, we're going to another brief interlude again, its description. And they just to describe themselves. It's playful, they're self-aware of the moment, and it goes into the next track perfectly, which I feel if you're our age, you know this track.
Whoa, wait. Okay, go ahead.
The next one, Me, Myself, and I.
Oh, whoa.
That I feel...
Not to be confused with Me, Myself, and Irene.
I feel that this is probably...
We may get it on. Me, Myself, and I, knock me down.
I want to say... I'm trying to think of a song in the late 80s, rap-wise, that was bigger than this track, and I'm I'm struggling to come up with.
Oh, wait,
something.
That was 90s. Some reason I was thinking of that deepest shade of soul.
Yeah.
But yeah, at that time, you're right.
This song blew up.
Yes, it did.
This was also one that was on the Nick Tunes, Nick Rocks, whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I never saw that show.
Yeah.
Group.
This was the first time I heard
enough, it was the Fat Boys who played.
This one?
They were the hosts.
So, oh, okay, okay.
And I was ironic, I was watching another one on YouTube. They Might Be Giants actually hosted one of the Nick.
Really?
Well, that makes sense.
So
they had Kid.
Yeah.
Not on the list.
Yeah. Istanbul, not Constantinople.
And I was like, the statue got me high.
So, Me, Myself, and I, again, like they challenge the stereotypes and embraces your individuality again. Like, the groove's funky. I love that little weird synth, like, and I love how it's delivered too. The change up
too. It's just me and myself.
I get that. I see why it's a single.
Yes, yes.
Clearly, it needed to be.
And it's way into the album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
20? Yeah, 20.
Yeah, we're at track 20.
Yeah.
And then the next track is, this is a recording for Living in a Full-Time Era.
Love these titles.
Yeah. This is definitely one of the more serious tunes. It's coming out of, you know, Me, Myself, and I, which is, you know, catchy,
yeah,
sort of like dancey and lighthearted. This one, it's like, oh.
Funeral dirge.
We're going to, well.
Okay, not that bad. I'm just kidding.
It's laid back, it's jazzy, but it's definitely philosophical.
You're right,
it's
right.
Introspective. That was what I got from it. Anything else we want to add there? And I feel like I kind of want to rush. I'm rushing this, but there's like 23 tracks on this particular album. Was like last week was SOS by SZA. I was like, hey, it's a great album. There's 23 tracks on it.
This particular episode, we're trying to emulate what it's like to listen to these two albums. Yeah. You just lose sense of time. It just flows.
Yeah. It was one of those ones, kind of like a couple weeks ago where we did the Nina Simone and
Aretha
Franklin. It was just fun to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. That was really fun.
Yeah. So that's why I said let's do this, because we did. I mean, with Kendrick's especially last week, because that album was so serious. I was like, all right, we need to lighten it up a little bit. Because don't get me wrong, Kendrick, that's a great album, but that's some heavy lifting after a while. It's one of those like, okay, well, we got a little lighter.
Okay.
But this song was definitely, again, it's in late into the album. You get this sort of serious track, and then we get into the next track after that. I Can Do Anything, Delicratic. It's whimsical. That was what I
can do anything.
It emphasizes freedom, creativity.
Oh, that's really
lame. It's experimental.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really sound anything like anything else, again, but this album, I don't think, I mean, it's a hip-hop album, but I can't think of any other album in 89 that I think, even like the Beastie Boys' Paul's Boutique, which is another album, sounds pretty different than anything else. It doesn't sound anything like this album.
No.
Very, very unique in that aspect, and I feel like the reason both of these albums belong on the list is I really can't think of anything it sounds like them, including their own works. So,
if you go by the one thing about the impact at the time and everything,
I guess
you definitely
what you're going for. And then the last track is The Daisy Age. Celebrates the group's philosophy of positivity, self-awareness. It's playful, it's upbeat. And it sort of is the essence of the entire album.
Yeah.
So,
like, it sums it up really good.
Yeah, it really does. It does. This album, both of these are very complete albums, folks. I didn't really feel like, even
very impressed.
With 23 tracks on it, you don't really feel like you need to skip anything.
Dope.
Both of the albums were great.
Right, and with those 23 tracks, like, it wasn't easy. It was easy listening. Mm-hmm. It was really smooth.
And again, this album definitely revolutionizes sampling, I would say. And I'm thinking that this album definitely influenced the sampling of the album previous, for sure. I mean, obviously Q-Tip
yes.
being on it, you definitely think, hey guys, I think we should sample a lot of jazz beats. It's going to work really well. Got an idea. But yeah, this definitely influenced a ton of other artists. And I'm not just saying hip-hop, because I'm thinking albums like The Avalanches, Since I Left You.
Oh, yeah.
Which has, 900 and something samples on it, some absurd number. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to know what the licensing cost was on that album. But yeah, definitely had to be somewhat influenced by that. So, do we have anything we want to add, or do we want to start show closing and talking about next week? And
which one? What are we doing next week?
Yeah, what is next week?
That's a good question.
Or maybe we'll discuss it here on air.
Yeah.
I mean, if I go now, I have time for homework.
Yeah.
I feel like...
What are you thinking?
I want to go in a different direction.
Okay.
I was thinking, you know, it's March. I kind of want to do some rock.
Okay.
I'm not saying, you know, because there's not a lot of rock on there, so, you know, obviously we got to save some. There's a lot of hip-hop, a lot of R&B.
There is a lot
of
those.
But the... I just feel like we need... I don't want to, like, ignore rock, because I don't... I think we've only really done one rock album so far.
Yeah.
That's Rage. No, I'll take that back. We've done Nine Inch Nails.
Can we do number 101, which is one of Pearl Jam's?
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Well, I was going to say...
I saw that list, 101 through 200. No, I'm just saying, what?
I was definitely thinking...
We're going to start doing...
I wanted to
branch off.
Nirvana's Nevermind to Pearl Jam's 10.
Oh.
Because I feel... Here's the thing.
Nevermind's so crunchy.
Yeah, but history...
Yeah.
History reveres Nevermind, I have a feeling, more so because he's not with us. Because I'm going to tell you right now, when... Jeremy broke, they were definitely the bigger band. I'm going to tell you that. Sales figures don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
They were murdering Nirvana on sales. Mm-hmm. And it was to the point where even, because I remember Kurt being kind of miffed that they were so successful.
Yeah.
Considering they were, well, we kind of sort of broke through. How come they're doing better?
And of course, they're awesomer, duh.
And then, of course, Jeff on that was kind of like, you do remember that I
no
was
bias.
In Green River, right? So if anyone wants,
right. Yeah.
Talking about founding this, like, we're one of the two bands that really kind of founded it. So
Mother Love Bone,
yeah,
Green River.
So, you know.
Right.
But I was thinking we could do that. Do we want to do Nirvana and Pearl Jam's 10 next week? I'm game for it.
That feels exciting to me.
I'm game for it.
Had my other idea too. And Allison Soundgarden. No, I'm just kidding. That's four.
Yeah, but...
And actually, no, I kind of wish going back now, we could have done Downward Spiral with Dirt, because I would have just been done. I would have jumped off the stiffs. No.
We'll follow it up.
No, that sounds good, though, those two.
A basement on a hill?
And then, that's just, that's why you're already laying on the ground. It's like, listen to this now. No, that would be cool. 10 and...
Yeah, I'm saying, why don't we do that? That's something fun.
And we could talk about the two different 10s, too. Didn't Brendan O'Brien do the read?
Yeah.
That brings it more in line with the others.
Took out some background vocals.
He thought about Rick Rubin and what he did with Rain and Blood.
And
take out the reaver.
Talk about how you fell asleep to Nirvana's Nevermind, because the last track's quiet, and then there's that hidden track.
Oh, God. Right.
Yes.
I hate hidden tracks. You don't need to...
We don't have them anymore.
It's stupid. Here's the thing.
But we do on Rock and Roll.
Probot. I have that album on
like a set.
They put a hidden track...
The King Diamond one.
No.
No, wait.
It's the Jack Black one.
Oh, King Diamond was the last track of the album. Sorry.
The thing is, you can't hide a track on vinyl because you can clearly see where the music grooved in. Like, you're like, oh, sounds, oh, gee, I wonder if there's a track there. So you sit there and you play it on 45 speed to try to get to the last track a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
Because I'm not lifting the needle and dropping it on track.
And then you get to it, and it's just me going, okay, you found me.
No, it's
no, there's no music.
I forget, there is a name. It's, I Am the Warlock, I believe is what it's called.
I forgot Jack Black was,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's pretty. That album, that's Dave Grohl's best record, period.
Huh. We gotta do that sometime. You know, that is all guest singers and stuff.
And it's all like heavy metal.
Lemmy's on it, right?
Lemmy, Max Cavalera's on it.
The guy from Venom. From Venom?
Yeah.
Yeah, and King Diamond, I like that one.
I mean, it's
do more of this, Dave.
Yeah.
And he was emulating their styles for each of the songs. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of thinking, if we do that next week, it would be a change up for us.
We'd like to involve other albums, maybe that have similar feels like this one, Will.
Because I was stuck with Nevermind on what to pair it with. And I said we could either do Pearl Jam or we could do My Bloody Valentine's Loveless. And I guess you'd have to depend on where you wanted to go with that. As you know, you can talk about the noise factor because both of those albums came out in 91. They're super noisy. And they're a different type of noise.
And they both seem to represent different sides of the pond because grunge is what kept shoegaze from really blowing here. Boy.
Well, that and the fact that you really can't understand the lyrics.
And the noisy.
I mean, they buried it so far in the mix on that album. It's too far buried, I think. Why not?
And yet that one producer said he was trying to get a... What was it? He was trying to making sure he had Kevin Shields' trust, and if even one hi-hat in the noise was off, he would hear it.
Yeah.
Like Kevin Shields has that ability. It's like,
well, to now I hear he can't hear anything.
But now, of course, he can't.
Oh, that's so funny.
Well, they had to stop recording that album because they were getting tinnitus.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I bet they were. I mean, you mean to tell me you put amps facing each other and put aluminum foil in between the two amps facing each other? Mm-hmm. That causes a lot of loud noise.
Tried that at Paul's house. Man, that was interesting. When he put the two together, when the Vox was still over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I guess we should close it up. So I guess next week we're going to do some Nirvana. We're going to do some Pearl Jam.
She's so happy. In fact,
goodness.
The Pearl Jam side.
Talk too much.
I was going to say Monster will probably head up the thing for 10, and Trigger will become like me.
Well,
I'm going to try to be chill.
Well, see, here's my thing, though. here's my thing that I know is going to earn me a lot of late Generation X, older millennial hate. Nirvana never really did it for me.
Stay tuned.
I don't think they're terrible or anything like that, but...
You would put PJ higher?
But I feel like we all have a different Seattle band here. I know you're Pearl Jam. I think you're Alice, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a Soundgarden guy.
And I know you like Soundgarden too, though. There's not four of us.
I mean, I feel like...
Eddie Vedder's Chris Cornell's kids' godfather.
Mm.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess our deep dive into hip hop's albums.
Speak truths.
For the first time ever. No,
we're very interesting.
And usually lie, but when it comes to Pearl Jam, it's all truth.
He's trying to wrap.
The Tribe Called Quest. The 3 Feet High and Rising by the De La Soul.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
These are records, they redefine what hip-hop was going to sound like. Definitely on the emotional, intellectual reach. The jazz, the funk, the playful lyricism, the powerful messages, the unforgettable beats. These albums, I thought, challenged convention. Because they're unique. Both groups paved the way for generations of alternative hip-hop.
Well said.
I feel like acts like Jurassic 5 don't exist without either one of these two.
Forget about them too, Jurassic 5.
Their power in numbers album, by the way. Fantastic. These albums provided a legacy that I think because they were so authentic and they were so creative. They're always going to have that place. They belong somewhere. So this was considered the Daisy Age of hip hop. I found out. I did that research. And this sort of was the journey that we got on it. Thank you for taking it with us. So that's week 7 of Pull the Trigger. Dun, dun, dun. I'm Trigger for Hodge and Monster.
Hey.
We'll be back next week to rock your socks off.
Whoa.
And until then, give these albums a listen, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.